Up next on This Week in Google, I'm Jason Howell filling in for Leo, and we've got a jam-packed show, lots of news to talk about. The end of Hangouts, you may feel like you've heard this once before. Well, apparently it's imminent. Also, the end of Allo is right around the corner. Facebook emails have been leaked by the EU, and we know a little bit more about what Facebook has done on the back end to kind of cover its trail a little bit. Snapdragon 855 was announced, Waymo 1, Project Dragonfly, and the problems that's creating for Google at this point. A whole lot to talk about. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 485, recorded on Wednesday, December 5th, 2018. The French Connection. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twig. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. You can learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. And by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. It's time for TWIG. That stands for This Week In and Google. I'm Jason Howell filling in for Leo. Leo is out. I think he gets back this weekend. At least I hope so, because I'm doing new screensavers with him. So I'm going to bank on that. And I always enjoy when he's gone because I get to hop into this show. I love This Week in Google. So thanks for letting me kind of take it over. Joining us today, of course, Stacey Higginbotham, creator of the IoT podcast and Internet of Things newsletter. How you doing, Stacey?
So great. Thanks.
Fantastic. It's good to have you here. Good to see you. And then also, we don't have Jeff quite yet. Apparently, he's in France, and maybe he will fly in at some point. If so, we'll make room on the set, of course, for him. But in his absence, we have Kevin Toefel coming back about Chromebooks.com and also the IoT podcast along with Stacey. How's it going, KT?
You silly American. it's going well. I'm probably not as happy as Stacey is right now, and we'll find out why a little later, but I'm in a good mood.
Oh boy, that's quite a setup. I want to ask like right now, but do we have to wait until later?
I don't know. It's not my thing of the week, so we're okay if you want to.
Okay, cool.
Is that what we call it? The thing of the week? No.
Those things and items and whatever it is that we call them. Why don't we start the show with something good? Why don't we start the show with something that Stacey is excited about? What are you excited about?
This is the moment for the gin calendar, right? Not Google stuff?
I think so.
Last week.
Is that your thing of the week? Is your thing of the week the gin calendar? If so, I'm sorry.
It was my thing of the week last week.
I see. Okay.
And so what happened is Kevin Toefel apparently decided that I was worthy of owning one of these, and he ordered one for me as a Christmas present, which is really nice. Thanks, Kevin. So I'm having my first gin and tonic made with one of my brand new gins. It's from Italy, and it is quite delicious.
Hey, this totally works. Chicken head in the chat. Twig, This Week in Gin. It works.
This week,
I don't know if that was coined last week, but it works for this week too.
I don't think so, which is really astonishing.
Yeah.
So this is, I will not drink too many of these, but I did want to partake and enjoy.
I think that you should drink too many of those. If it's an advent calendar, you got to at least drink one a day, right?
This is my daughter's argument. She's like, I ate the chocolate right away when I opened my advent calendar. You've got 4 unopened bottles, Mom. I'm
like, you got some catching up to do.
When did Advent start?
An Advent calendar counts down 1 to 24 days till Christmas Eve.
So today is the 5th, so you should go through 5 on the show and get caught up.
Mm. Good God. That's 5 ounces of alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, let's see how we could break this up. If you finish a bottle before the first ad, then a bottle before the second ad, then a bottle before the third ad, and then a bottle with your thing at the end of the show. I mean, that's four bottles. You're close at that point.
She should do a shot right now.
That way you're guaranteed to make it. And I swear this entire episode might make the best of in that case.
There we go. Well, I don't want to be... I'll definitely hit one. If I hit two, we'll be okay. That's not crazy amounts of alcohol. I can still talk intelligently about some things. Not all things.
She does two or three on the IoT podcast and she's fine every week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, and that's at like 8 a.m. So
that's the 8 a.m. everyone knows is the best time for gin.
Exactly.
We all know this. It's how I start my day. What do we want to start with that doesn't involve alcohol?
Let's talk about what's happening with the communications platforms that we have long mocked Google for.
Oh boy. Yes.
Hangouts. Yeah. I feel like I should be wearing, I am wearing black, but what's happening there?
What is going on with Hangouts? Well, apparently 9to5 Google has sources that say Hangouts is going to reach its end of life in 2020. I feel like the writing has been on the wall here with Hangouts, and then we'll talk about Allo in a second. The writing's really on the wall with Allo. But, you know, they made the shift away from Hangouts as a consumer product towards it being an enterprise product. Of course, Hangouts Chat and Hangouts Meet, I think, are only available if you're a G Suite subscriber. But 9to5 Google posted this article to say, well, the consumer version of Hangouts is going away. Then somebody on the team from Google said, wow, you know, your sources are really off the mark. Scott Johnson, there we go. From Google says your sources are off the mark, that the consumer Hangouts will at some point be upgraded to Hangouts Chat and Hangouts Meet. So I don't know. As usual with Google messaging, I'm completely confused when news or leaks happen. You just never actually know what the deal is.
So Hangouts Chat is just chat, and Hangouts Meet is the audio and video? What? Help.
Exactly. Exactly.
So Stacey, you have a G Suite account. I do not. And you and I use Hangouts all the time.
We will never talk again.
Nope.
No, we won't. Not on regular Hangouts, because once we get migrated, or until we get migrated, I should say, if Hangouts is sort of shut down, I don't think they'll do that where consumers don't have an option. You would have to invite me to a video chat, for example, because I'm outside of your G Suite domain.
Using what?
You would use Hangouts Meet for video or Hangouts Chat to chat with me.
Oh, okay. So I would still use it and invite you, but it would no longer be this wonderfully convenient IM kind of function on the side of my Gmail.
Correct. It would no longer be this wide open IM, which is really how it's been since day one, or since the product before it, however you want to look at it. What Google, it's ironic that we're talking about messaging apps, and it's really Google's messaging that's really the issue here. It's branding, it's messaging, it's PR. They have to tell a story here, and they're not telling it. They're letting the story be told for them, and that's not the way you want to do things. Meet and Allo, or Allo and Duo, I mean, that was going to replace things. That sort of didn't happen. Is Duo, I don't know what's going to happen to Duo, because why would you have a duplicate of Hangouts Meet and Duo? I'm not sure. But they did, Jason, as you said, you know, start devoting resources away from consumer towards enterprise. And I mean, a lot of enterprises, that comes with their G Suite. A lot of enterprises actually do use that. If you're a G Suite shop, that's pretty much the thing to use. But it just wasn't clear on what was happening with the consumer side. It wasn't clear from the time they put Allo and Duo out there a year and a half, 2.5 years ago, whatever it was.
No, and obviously it's continued to be confusing. Today, a 9to5 Google post from a reliable source there says that Allo is going to be shut down, quote, soon, although they say it's probably at least somewhat delayed because of this Hangouts story that, you know, that published that we started talking about. The last Allo update happened back in January. That was about the time that the Allo lead Emmett Foley left for Facebook, and then if you remember, Allo's team was entirely diverted over to Android Messages to kind of lead up that team, which, you know, there at that point you're kind of like, okay, well, Allo's days are definitely numbered. It's just so confusing. There's so much movement, there's so many name changes, there's so many let's stop making our product for consumers, and now it's for business, and now it's back to consumers again. No wonder nobody knows what's going on. It's just so confusing.
So right now, then, should I, I'm not going to worry about this until like right before it sunsets,
right.
But
yeah.
I am going to keep my eyes open, because then what kind of messaging and IM service do I use to talk to the world? I can't use Facebook Messenger because I don't use Facebook.
Right. That's a good question. I mean, I think Google would love for Android messages at some point. It is still called Android messages, right?
There's messages.
Or is it Google messages?
That's texting. I don't want, I need a differentiation between texting and voicemail.
And voicemail.
Texting in like IM chat. Sorry.
Well, I think the idea behind Android messages was that it was going to get the RCS functionality built into it, which would bring it closer to being a more unified product of, yes, SMS, but also kind of the chat features that you get in a messaging app. I don't know, you know, but you might want those siloed between two different places entirely, you know?
I do, because my friends text me and I like to ignore it, but I need my messaging needs to be immediate, and those aren't my friends. Those are my work people who might also be my friends.
Wait. Yeah, I was going to say, hold on a second.
It's like, you hey, evil woman.
What are you saying about me, huh?
Yeah, this all ties into, as you're saying, the RCS chat. And I know we're going to discuss that in a second. But I just wonder, see, part of the issue is Android messages is an Android app. It's not like you're going to have that on an iPhone, whereas you have iMessage and on your iPhone. So are they going to make that work together? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Google wants an open platform, I think, for chat, and it's hard to do when you've got iOS and iMessage. So I thought Hangouts was that, because I use Hangouts on my iPhone all the time. I use it on my Apple Watch to talk to Stacey when I'm walking the dog. I mean, I don't know. I think they're just trying to figure out what to do. And a lot of these IM clients have been bought up. You know, WeChat is what, with Facebook now, right?
Is WeChat with Facebook, or is it
Oh, WhatsApp.
No, it's WhatsApp. There we go.
There's too many of these. That's the problem.
There are. And they're all like combinations of the same words, but in different orders and stuff. it's true. It's confusing at this point. Even when Google came out with Allo, it still felt like Google was behind, like it had already missed that opportunity. And the fact that Allo is being shuttered after not very long of existing, and after Google totally built it up in the beginning, proves that it was just really late to the game with Allo, and it should have, you know, moved on that type of a product before. Or that Hangouts was the solution all along, and for whatever reason they decided to bail and change their strategy. And that's really unfortunate, because I feel like at a certain point all they really needed to do was really cultivate that SMS functionality within Hangouts and kind of clarify it a little bit. And that would have been the great option. That would have been the perfect service. People were using it already. But that's just not how Google does things.
I could tell you a little bit about how Google does things. And I think two of these come into play here. One is that over the past couple of years, Google's made a really big push to get into enterprise and therefore differentiate some of its products between enterprise and consumer. So that's why we have Hangouts and Hangouts Meet, for example. Secondly, I can't stress this enough, Google is such a data-driven company that I don't want to say it doesn't matter if consumers or people like a certain product, that Google doesn't care that they like it. But if the data shows that they're not getting, you know, their 10x or 100x efficiency return or whatever it may be, or engagement, et cetera, they don't keep it around. That's how they look at everything. It's mm-hmm. all data driven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And you mentioned Duo as far as like who knows what's going to happen with Duo. Strangely, I think Duo is one of the things that seems to be working okay. The you know, Duo ends up pre-installed on phones. I think it's getting regular updates. I think I just saw in the chat room a new update today that's around improving faster video messaging using Duo. So, but I don't know how that interplays with a video solution on, you know, Hangouts chat or me. I guess it would be Meet. I don't know. It's super
confusing. I have 6 contacts in Duo. 3 of them are people I forced to be on Duo to talk to me on Duo.
So you are not sold on the Duo strategy.
Well, no, I'm just like, and one of them is Kevin.
That makes sense.
So I can see, I still, out of all of my contacts, there's only a few that are actually on Duo.
Yeah.
Jerry W. at Twit is on Duo. Okay. Go Jerry W.
Jerry.
Hey
Jerry.
I have never used Duo.
Aren't we using Duo to connect with you in France right now? Isn't Duo powering our French connection?
No, I'm using Skype from Chrome.
Of course you are. Jeff Jarvis, buzzmachine.com. How you doing, Jeff? It's great to see you.
All right. Let's hope this works.
So far, so good.
Jeff, you need to grab a bottle of vino because this is a beverage heavy twig.
Cool. I already had mine late here.
All right. Well, we all have a beverage. It's just 50% of us have water and the other 50 are getting drunk.
Just utterly trashed. Trashed on twig. No. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Well, it's good to have you here, Jeff. We did not talk about the slate without you, because I'm sure that you are interested in the Google Pixel slate. We might as well do that now because I just said the words out loud. What do you think? First of all, before we kind of talk about, you know, Kevin's had his time with the Pixel slate. I've had a good amount of time with my Pixel slate. I'm always curious to know, Jeff, where you stand on Google's solutions for its Chrome OS, tablets and laptops and everything. What do you think?
So just now I was trying to get on and I had to reboot because the Android app insisted on answering. It wouldn't let go. And we know that it's inferior. And I had to get to the Skype on the browser, which isn't perfect either. But so I had to reboot. So what's the problem there? The problem is that Android apps on Chrome are still inadequate. Mm. Thus, the app world on Chrome is still inadequate. I love my Pixelbook, as does Kevin like his. For God's sakes, he devoted a blog and part of his career to it. Bless him. But I'm not ready to say that Chrome is the OS for all yet. Yeah. And as a tablet goes, I think Android is still a better OS for a tablet than Chrome is.
Android is better as a tablet OS than Chrome OS is as a tablet OS. Neither are amazing in tablet form.
It's a low bar, though.
But if you had to choose between the two, and I would actually probably agree with that, even though I thought that I would carry the other side of it, because in my time with the Pixel slate, there just isn't a whole lot of points in my life where I really want to work in a productivity environment with a tablet, but I've kind of forced myself to with the Pixel slate, and all it's done has been full of headaches. Like, it's just weird little hiccups trying to be productive on the Pixel slate in tablet mode, working within like Google Docs and everything like that. I appreciate that Google has made the updates. Yeah, here it is with an overhead shot. That they've made the updates to Chrome OS to better appeal to tablet form factors. But I don't know if is it gonna snap out, or does it feel the magnet behind? There we go. So I mean, it's set up a little bit nicer for a touch environment, but there's just weird stuff. Like I've been trying to multitask and do like the split screen thing, so I'd have one app on this side, one app on this side, and I'd tap onto one side to edit into the field, and the on-screen keyboard would come on, and it would throw everything out of order, and you can minimize it down into a small keyboard on the side, but there was just no fluidity, no seamlessness about it. I'd tap over here to type, and it would still be caught over on this window, and then I'd have to go over here and find out where I typed over there, because even though I typed over here to put focus on this side, it still didn't register. And just weird things like that, that, you know, on a productivity device, that's going to slow you down. And you're only going to deal with that so many times before you completely give up. And that's how I feel about the tablet form factor on the Pixelbook slate.
Let me ask a question here. Actually, I'll make an agreement with Jeff. There's definitely work to be done on Android apps in Chrome OS. That's not unique to the Pixel slate, because the Pixel slate runs the same software as every other Chromebook. It's actually one version ahead right now, but the rest will catch up next week. So any Android app issues you have on the slate, you're going to have elsewhere as well. It's no different.
Yeah.
However, I guess I've been using this full time for productivity. Like, I spent 6 hours yesterday coding on it, writing some blog posts, doing my normal stuff. And I was very productive, which is not what you just said you were, Jason.
Did you do it in a tablet environment, or did you do it with an attached keyboard?
That's the point I'm bringing up. So I'm kind of being funny here. Don't take this the wrong way. You're using it wrong.
Yeah. No. I would agree. I would absolutely agree. But yes, continue.
I don't really mean it that way. But my point is, to be productive on most any device, you probably need a hardware keyboard, right?
Yeah.
To try and split screen and use an on-screen keyboard and expect the same productivity that you would get from a laptop or a desktop, I don't find that to be a feasible expectation. Mm-hmm. So yes, I have the keyboard attached. It's actually on my lap. It was on my lap for 6 hours yesterday. I was in a recliner. Yes, the keyboard does wobble, or the slate wobbles when you type. I'm kind of used to it by now. A lot of people wrote it off after one day, and I get that. It's a very personal choice, keyboards. But I would never try and be productive with this without the keyboard for any length of time, I guess I should say. And when I don't want to be productive, meaning that's when I'm going to watch my YouTube TV and just cruise the web and chill out and whatnot, that's when I take the keyboard off and I'm just in my lean back mode with my tablet.
Man, I never have lean back modes with my tablet anymore. That's my problem.
Yeah, when I'm in lean back mode, I'm like, screw my devices. Yeah. Is there a jigsaw puzzle screen I can do?
Yeah, I completely agree, Kevin. And it's a fair point. I think my exercise has been, if Google has created a device that it sees, that it has created a device around its updates to Chrome OS to make it more friendly in both a docked environment and a touchscreen environment, how far could I push that? And could I be productive if I didn't have that keyboard? I would say that in that regard, I probably am using it wrong. There's probably better uses for just the tablet mode. In that case, it's probably fine. Like you said, though, you are going to run into these issues with Android apps, which is I would say a large part of what you might want to do with it in tablet mode is, oh, well, I'll run a tablet app and play some games and whatever. And there are going to be weird little issues that, you know, that pop up here and there. And that's probably more on that kind of strange kind of sandwiching of Android app compatibility into Chrome OS. Sometimes I love that as a feature, and I love that they are capable of doing that. But sometimes I desire more streamlined something with it. And at least Chrome OS in a keyboard environment feels familiar to me from the Pixelbook, and I can move fast on a Pixelbook. And I'll be honest, like this, the Pixel Slate keyboard, when I first started using it, I didn't care for it. It's really grown on me. I think my only complaint for it is that it does have this kind of deepness to it, that if you're really using it, you know, on your lap as a laptop, it can be a little awkward. Thankfully, I'm 6'8", so I have really long legs, so it works for me. I could see how it would not work for most people, because it's just super deep as far as that's concerned, and a little wobbly when you're in that situation. But so possibly for me, maybe that Bridge. Have you checked out the Bridge keyboard option?
Is it out yet?
I think it is.
Yeah. It's out, and it's $40 less than the Google option, and it has less of a footprint because you're just sliding the tablet piece into the keyboard itself. There's nothing behind the keyboard at that point for a base. It's more stable for sure. I didn't find the typing experience or the trackpad experience quite as good. I'm not saying it's bad, but also it's Bluetooth. And Chrome OS has some Bluetooth issues. Google's been working on a new Bluetooth stack for Chrome OS. So I didn't want to go that route, even though I know it would have made for a better laptop. But it's out. It's nice. It's nice. I felt the same as you, Jason. I wasn't too crazy. In fact, 10 minutes after my review unit got here, I was on email with my PR contact at Google. I'm like, what is up with this keyboard? Why is it wobbling, et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, I mean, they know. What's done is done. It's been designed, and all I could do is make suggestions at this point. But it has grown on me, and you know, it's kind of like phones. When I get a really big phone, bigger than what I used to have, I'm like, oh, this is terrible. A couple days later, I'm like, it's not so bad. And then a week later, I'm like, what was I complaining about? This is awesome. It's not keeping me from being productive, I should say. So I would tell people to give it a try if they're interested in a tablet. And not everybody needs a tablet. That's a whole other aspect of this conversation, I think.
Yeah. The key to me here is you're both right. The problem is that, because you're right, Kevin, this is exactly like my Chromebook Pixel. The only thing is that I hardly ever think of it as a tablet, except when you buy the Slate, you're thinking of it first as a tablet, and that brings out all its weaknesses. But it is the same. The only time I used a Pixel as a tablet is I just did on the airplane coming here and flip it around to watch a movie or something. Otherwise, I am always in laptop mode, and it is always a wonderful machine. The only weakness is when I get on the plane and I want to watch Netflix or come here and use Skype. But otherwise, yeah, it's great. But when you have a tablet, every tablet weakness just becomes more apparent.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with what you said, but it's kind of funny. I look at it completely the opposite. I looked at it as I love my Pixelbook, but I'm not a fan of using that in tablet mode for my entertainment time because it's heavier and so on. So I'm like, I can get the Pixelbook laptop experience here. And then when I want the little lean back experience later, just a tablet, I just pull it off and go sit down somewhere and I'm good. I don't know. It's, again, I'm looking at it differently because...
How many computers do you own, or how many computers do you work on a daily basis? I mean, because I think that's part of it. If you have like a regular laptop, you have a tablet. I don't know if you need a tablet, but if you have a regular laptop, would you use this?
I was full-time on the Pixelbook for about 6 or 8 months. Before that, I was full-time on an iPad Pro for a year and a half. And Jason, I didn't use that without a keyboard. I wouldn't even try. It was the same discussion we had earlier. I mean, I was productive, but with their keyboard.
Yeah.
The Slate, I sold my Pixelbook already. I shipped it 2 days ago. I'm full-time on the Slate.
Huh.
Yeah, and it's a really fair point that as far as, you know, you using the iPad Pro with a keyboard 100% of the time, This is probably my first time using this type of a device, like this type of a convertible that pops out the tablet with any sort of regularity outside of just like, oh, that's interesting, that's neat for 20 minutes or, you know, maybe a short amount of time. Like, I've been living on the Slate for, you know, since I got it like a week and a half ago. And so it's my first time kind of thinking in these terms. And yeah, I feel like you've kind of turned a light bulb on in my head as far as that's concerned, because I wanted to hold it. I want to hold it to a certain standard because it presents itself as a tablet OS, you know, Chrome OS device, and I want it to work so well in that mode for things so you don't always need the keyboard. But the reality is it's just really hard to do that, and you really see that when you're editing a Google Doc and you type into a cell and then suddenly the keyboard pops up. You've got this much viewable space above it, and it's like it doesn't know where to put the contents of everything on the screen. Everything becomes kind of jumpy and unexpected. And that's a way to do it. It's not the way to do it. The way to do it would be to use some sort of an attachment like this keyboard. And in that regard, I would say with the keyboard attachment, absolutely. I'm just as productive as I would be with my Pixelbook that I've gotten very used to. And I think when I first got this, you know, probably like a day or two after getting this, I was like, oh man, I'm totally going to go back to the Pixelbook because I just don't know if I can do this. I'm happy that I continued working with it because I have come around to it. And you're right. It's nice to be able to pop it out if I wanted to. I haven't flown on any airplanes and needed to entertain myself by popping it out yet. So apparently I need to take a trip.
No, you just need to take an office chair and stick another office chair about 17 inches in front of your office chair and then try.
That could do it because, yes, exactly. I wouldn't have any space to put this on the tray in front of me on a plane if I wanted to get work done. So there's the opposite problem.
Yeah.
So to Stacey's question, Jason, if next week Leo came back and said you're allowed one machine for everything, which one is it?
Oh, boy. I think I, in general, the past few years have tried to keep myself committed to whatever the latest Google released phone is and the Google released, Pixel laptop, whatever incarnation. So I'd probably pick this because I feel like I need to be along with Google at the front of their kind of philosophy. You know what I mean? And so I probably would pick this because in all reality, this whole environment is not making me less productive when I have it all docked and in this mode. The length of it is annoying, but it's not a deal breaker for me. You know what I mean? Everything else I'm able to do just as good as anything else that I use.
Are you going to buy the Bridge keyboard?
I don't know, because every review that read about it makes it seem like it's a great solution if you want the form factor while it's docked to be more Pixelbook-like, but it's not very good if you have high... if you have a high bar for the quality of the trackpad and the keyboard, like you said, Kevin.
And Bluetooth problems.
What's that?
And Bluetooth problems.
And Bluetooth problems. That's another big one. So I don't know if that's worth it to me, because I know for myself that one of the things that really annoys me about a lot of the the Chromebooks that I've tested over the last couple of years is the quality of the trackpad and the quality of the keyboard. That right there, like everything else could be amazing, but if those things feel like a toy, then I never want to use it, period. And so if that's going to be the Bridge keyboard, then it's not worth it to me.
Kevin, have you played with the Bluetooth upgrade?
I have not installed it on the Pixel Slate because I don't have a Bluetooth keyboard for it. So other than, let's see, I had my Sony's to watch a couple hours of Netflix last night, Bluetooth connected. I had no problems. But, you know, I think it's hit or miss depending on the device that you're connecting, the type of device, which Bluetooth chip it has, because there are some people in the forums that say, I don't have any Bluetooth problems, but yet there's a lot of people who do. So I don't know what it is that's causing it.
Do you have the Bluetooth upgrade yet?
Oh, anybody can get it. It's in the Chrome flags. You just go into Chrome flags, and it's new blue, N-E-W-B-L-U-E.
Just enable asking, that flag. Have you enabled it yet?
Not on the Slate. I had it on my Pixelbook, but I generally didn't have any Bluetooth problems. So I don't know. But people can try it if that's, you know, if they're having Bluetooth problems on a Pixelbook, on any Chromebook, actually, just go into the flags and turn new blue on. Give that a shot. Maybe that'll help. It's kind of funny, just real quick, because I don't want to, you know, hog up the whole show with Pixel Slate, but...
Oh, please do.
That's why we're
Jeff's here for it, man.
I read all the reviews that came out the same day as mine and whatnot, and part of me, after reading some of them, was like, did we use the same device? Because I couldn't even replicate some of the issues that people said they saw, and I don't doubt that they saw them, but I don't know why I couldn't replicate them. There are other many legitimate gripes, don't get me wrong. It needs some work. I think everything is very fixable. But I keep hearing, I just heard this a few minutes ago in the conversation here, you know, that this is a tablet first. And I'm like, again, I'm not sure I look at it that way because it has a desktop. It has a desktop browser, which is a plus on a tablet. No other tablet, save for Microsoft Surface, has a desktop browser. The iPad doesn't. That actually was the bottleneck for me being as productive as I could be on an iPad Pro. So now I can be more productive. I got the desktop browser. So I guess I don't look at it as a tablet first, even though it technically is a Slate. And if you're going to just buy the Slate, then sure, obviously you are looking at it as a tablet. But I never even thought about buying it without a keyboard. To me, this was always, this will be my Pixelbook laptop experience when I need it. And then when I don't, I can just do what I want to do, you know. So just an observation.
Mm-hmm. And for Android developers, is the Pixelbook Slate in tablet form factor mode, is that a good way to test your apps on a tablet?
You could. Let's see. I mean, I have Android Studio.
I don't know if it's a good definitive way to do that, but.
Well, it's kind of the only way because you can't yet connect an Android phone to over USB to any Chrome OS device through Christini on Linux because the USB support isn't there yet. So you have to actually run your app locally. So I would think it actually would be a good environment, but the better environment would be actually using a phone or multiple phones to test different form factors, I think. Mm-hmm. I have it installed at Android Studio, but I haven't, I don't create Android apps yet, so I couldn't say for sure.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's take a break because we do have a sponsor to thank, and then we'll get back and we'll talk about a whole bunch of other googly stuff. We've got a lot in the dock today to get through. But first, this episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Obviously, every single day brings a new security breach, news of a new security breach, and you're like, man, them too. And at this point, people are getting kind of complacent, I would argue. But hopefully you're concerned about where your data goes. That's the most important thing. If you're making an online purchase, if you're accessing your mail, depending on the scenario, you could be putting your private information at risk. Because as we know, we're being tracked online. Social media sites, marketing companies, your mobile or internet provider, everybody's tracking these days. So not only can they record your browsing history, they often sell it to other corporations who want to profit from your information. And that's why we've decided to take back privacy by using ExpressVPN. Has easy to use apps that run seamlessly in the background. You can, you know, of course, load it on your computer, your phone, your tablet, apps for all platforms. turns on with a single click. And I feel like sometimes VPN solutions can be a little complicated. You don't get that complication with ExpressVPN. It's super straightforward. It secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data, hiding your public IP address. It allows you to safely surf on public Wi-Fi. So if you're at the coffee shop, as the often used example, you can go ahead and activate ExpressVPN and you won't be snooped on. You won't have your personal data stolen. No one can drop in on your data traffic over the Wi-Fi connection. It's rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and costs less than $7 a month. If you don't want to hand over your online history to your internet provider or data resellers, ExpressVPN is the answer. So protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package at expressvpn.com/twig. That's expressvpn.com/twig for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Just visit expressvpn.com/twig and you can learn more. And we thank ExpressVPN for their support of This Week in Google. All right. So we talked all about the Pixel Slate here. Let's see. Oh, I wanted to ask you guys. So, Pixel 3 users, are we all in that camp at this point or no?
Part time.
Okay. You got the 2. Jeff's got the 2.
The first time I haven't seen Pixel Envy. I'm stuck with the 2.
Okay. I'm curious to know why, because I like now, you know, kind of the dust has settled. I'm very familiar. I'm very used to my Pixel 3. I have to say it's been strangely buggy in different places. Ooh. And I always kind of expect a little bit of bugginess here and there. But like on and on, I get these weird like system hangups. Things just kind of stall out and then suddenly kick back in out of nowhere. My assistant commands are rarely registering. Like I'll say it through assistant and it will get it completely wrong and like dive into my contacts. I'm like, what are you doing? I said to navigate to like the store. And then I have to go into maps to issue the command. I know that they're issuing a December security patch that's fixing a number of issues, but is that part of the reason why you don't have Pixel Envy this year, Jeff? Like, are you hearing more and more of these reports of oddness with the Pixel 3, or is this something different?
No, it's just simply that I've been happy with Pixel 2, and nothing makes me envious of having the 3 yet.
Okay.
Not and even Night Sight?
Night Sight's on 2 now, isn't it?
Night Sight's on 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. They. I mean, it's, I don't know. I have the smaller version. I think you have the XL, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
But, man, it's still a great phone. Yeah. And it's expensive. The Pixel 3 is a lot of money for what didn't seem to be a lot of value. If the charging stand thingy came with it, maybe I'd consider it. That was the most interesting aspect of that release, actually.
Yeah.
And I mean,
yeah, it's another,
that is not a reason to buy a new phone.
No. That's another $70, even if you did want it. Although I think they had a deal not too long ago where they were including it for like a day or whatever. But they've had all sorts of weird deals like that. But have you noticed any issues? You say part-time, Kevin, on the Pixel 3. But I don't know. Are you using it with enough regularity to notice issues?
Probably not. My main phone is an iPhone XR, mainly because I can't live without the Apple Watch for my running and so on. And the whole family's on iPhone. So, you know, iMessages, Apple Music, et cetera. So the iPhone's my main phone. This is one thing I've prided myself on for 15 years, Jeff. I use anything and everything. So I have hopefully a broad understanding of what's happening overall in the market. I hear you. I mean, I would love to just pick one and be done with it. But, you know, one time I was using BlackBerry and Palm and, you know, just like Jason, I'm sure, was using a whole bunch of different operating systems on the phones back in the day.
Yeah.
But I haven't really seen too many issues. But then again, I might not be using it enough, or, you know, certain apps that I use are fine and other apps are having issues. I don't know.
Yeah, I find myself constantly talking myself out of it and being like, no, it's not the phone. It's not the phone. It's something else. But then it just keeps on happening. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't even know how to reverse engineer this and figure out like what it is, because it's definitely happening.
Yeah. They definitely had a RAM issue, which I think they have addressed recently.
Yeah, and it sounds like this December security patch includes some sort of tweak around memory management That was, and in this case, it was preventing apps from running simultaneously. So like if you're listening to music in the background and then you switch over to the camera to take a picture, you take the picture and it would stop the music in the background, just as one example. So I don't know if that's the same issue, you know, tied into what I've been experiencing, but, you know, and I'm trying not to jump to the conclusion of, oh, well, the Pixel 3 is buggy as all get out and it's different this time, but I can't deny the fact that these issues keep happening for me and I keep hearing other people complaining. So I don't know.
You know, if you use something for like a month and it's happening, I don't think you're jumping to a conclusion. Actually, that's not jumping to a conclusion.
Yeah.
No, but to be honest, I mean, even as an iPhone user, I see with the new brand new iOS big version updates or a new phone, for example, you'll see some bugs in the first month. They're usually minor. But they've had text messaging bugs, all kinds of issues over there on the Apple side. And it takes, you know, a 0.1 or a 0.2 release to get everything working just right. So I don't think it's exclusive to Google by any means.
Yeah. Let's see here.
Should we talk about Flutter?
I was hovering on Flutter. It's like you read my mind. Google officially launched Flutter 1.0, its first stable release. It's an open source toolkit for cross-platform UI development. That's Android and iOS. And in reading this article from Ron Amadio on Ars Technica, he kind of compares it to like game development for Unity, and that being kind of like a, you know, translating into something that can be played on all game systems. Similar situation here, but I'm not a developer.
He also said in there, and I thought this might be worth, I was curious about the reason, I can guess, but that it's moving from a Java-based environment. Flutter is based on Dart, which yes. Google had been focusing on. So, and Android's based on Java. So I didn't know if that was part of like the drama with the lawsuits or if that was just like Dart is the future. So I was kind of curious about that.
Mm-hmm. I think Google would like Dart and Kotlin to actually be mm-hmm. the future. Kotlin is, it's like basically Java compatible and you can translate between the two quite easily. It's actually easier to do certain things in Kotlin. And perhaps that's what Android apps will be written in the future. I think Flutter, my guess is it has a home on pretty much anything because it runs, you can create the app once and run it pretty much on anything, kind of like Java. And that makes me question, what about progressive web apps? Because that's been Google's big push for a while. I don't really know yet. But the big thing with Flutter that I can see is really from a developer standpoint. And I put a link in the show notes after Ron's article because there are a couple of videos on Medium, which was written by one of the Google developers for Flutter. And he shows that if you're using Android Studio and you're booting up the emulator to run a Flutter app, it took him 2 minutes and 40 seconds to do that. One of the big things with Flutter is they can just run it natively right there on the desktop. It takes 10 seconds. So that's a huge time savings if you are a developer right off the bat. It's very responsive, kind of like a progressive web app. So I'd like to read more about it because I'm just getting into Java myself. And now I'm like, well, maybe I need to be learning Flutter. I don't know yet. So,
You know, if you get used to developing these Flutter apps, you might be already preparing yourself for the post-Android apocalypse of Fuchsia.
Fuchsia.
Which Fuchsia runs Flutter apps natively. And a lot of people keep pointing to Fuchsia to be the long game for where Google goes next, moving, transitioning from Android to something else. But it's all, you know, conjecture at this point.
Go, Kevin.
I wonder if this plays into, and I don't think we have this on the show notes, but it's actually, I'm glad we went this way. Microsoft is getting rid of Edge, apparently, reportedly, to go to a Chromium-based browser. Mm-hmm. And that's probably going to shift their approach of applications to progressive web apps. Could it mean that they use Flutter too? I don't know. They don't need to if they're going to go with progressive web apps. But I just wonder what's going on with Microsoft and how it relates here, because they're kind of throwing the towel in on Edge and going with the Chromium, the open source Chromium browser reportedly that Google uses. So
yeah, it seems like a very big sudden kind of shift away. Not super familiar with Microsoft at this point, but that really
you've
took
heard
me
of them,
by
right?
surprise. I think they do
been around
an operating system that I think I've maybe seen once in my life, but that seems like a really big admission to some degree that they would take their web browser and shift it so drastically like that. Who knows where that leads. Let's see here. Should we talk a little bit about search? You guys want to talk about search? Got a number of kind of juicy nuggets here. Privacy search engine DuckDuckGo conducted a study that's, obviously they're a competitor, so take it with a grain of salt, but seems to show that Google search personalizes results even when a user is logged out of their Google account and when that user is using incognito mode. They did this in June of this year. They used search terms that were highly specific and divisive, things like gun control, immigration, vaccinations. In all cases, they did the first search with all people while they were logged out or in incognito mode on a machine. And then they logged in immediately after and did the same search to kind of compare the results between the two. And most users saw the same results as they saw while logged out. And the report seems to indicate a heavy amount of personalization going on, even when they're logged out, even when they're in some sort of privacy mode, with no clear indication as far as why or what it's actually based on. Google, of course, calls the methodology of the report flawed. Danny Sullivan, a friend of the show, also Google's public liaison for search, said on Twitter, had a whole kind of tweet storm on this, but basically said over the years, a myth has developed that Google search personalizes so much that for the same query, different people might get significantly different results from each other. This isn't the case. Results can differ, but usually for non-personalized reasons. So what y'all think? Does DuckDuckGo make a compelling case here, and should it matter?
I think it does matter because the idea of doing incognito means that you're not sharing information with Google, right?
Right, right.
So that definitely matters. It is hard to say. I think this is one of those gray areas where as we get more abstract, it's really hard to understand what's going on behind the scenes. And Google may be right and DuckDuckGo may be right. But what I mean here is there could be technicalities that are making things more personalized that Google will argue is not, you know, personalized, but is really, you know, based on like maybe it's your IP address's location or something like that. So I think it's going to be hard to say, it's going to be hard to parse, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that's a shame because it is, I don't know. I mean, I don't use incognito mode except when I'm trying to like test out random Google features. But, you know, if you're hardcore believing in incognito mode, this would be really kind of devastating.
I use incognito to test ads on my website because, mm-hmm. yeah, because, you know, I want to see what a random person might mm-hmm. see. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, it should be totally random ads. But honestly, every once in a while, maybe even a little more than that, I see ads for things that I know I've searched for very recently outside of incognito mode. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's an issue one way or the other, but I think Danny did a great job trying to explain it, and I'd like to test a little bit more personally.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard to say. I mean, there's so many elements now. You've got your device itself. You've got your version of, you know, whatever browser you're using. You've got your location, you've got your ISP, all of that can factor into it without being super personalized, right? And then the flip side is I used to use DuckDuckGo and I found it frustrating because Google's results were typically more relevant for me yeah. because they were personalized. So I think a greater transparency here in how this works and what Google uses might be interesting. You know, or rather really relevant to people who care about this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Dragonfly, China search engine. Here we go. Codename for Google's planned censored search engine in China was kept secret both internally and externally by those closest to the project. There's a new report on The Intercept that has Jonathan Zunger. I don't believe he's been a guest on, but I follow him on
Twitter.
He should be. Yeah, he would be an amazing guest. A 14-year veteran of Google on the record, along with others who still work on the project who chose to be anonymous, of course, talking about the lengths that they went to in order to keep all of it below the radar. You know, at one point they raised concerns about Chinese citizens being detained for searches that were conducted, but head of operations Scott Beaumont wasn't convinced, and that led to executives shutting out Google's own security and privacy teams from the meetings, also sidelining privacy review, which was led by Jonathan at the time. This was prior to him leaving Google, which he says he would have left. He left for another reason, but if he had stayed on, he would have left because of this, because he was so divided against everybody else on this. That would have analyzed human rights abuses. So making a lot of these decisions internally to say, let's sidestep these people because we don't want to focus too hard on these things. Let's continue forward with this search engine in China. What you guys think? Leave this one.
You know, I've defended Google, Lord knows. I've defended Facebook. Facebook's making it hard to defend them sometimes these days. And full disclosure is I received money for my school from Facebook, but I'm independent of them. I've received nothing from Google personally or from any of the platforms. But this one, I applauded Google when they pulled out of China. I applauded that they stood on principle, and I do not see what has changed that would make them go back. And so I'm very disappointed that Google is considering this and considering it against, I don't know what the numbers are. Maybe it's a very small number of their employees because they're so huge, but it is a fervent belief of some of their employees that they're going the wrong way. And I think you got to listen to that.
Yeah.
Now, the same guy I was talking, I heard somebody talk from the intelligence community the other day saying that Google's relationship with government overall is bad right now because of the pullback on drones and other military-related things, and the intelligence people say Google could be helping save the lives of service people if they were involved in these projects. I get that. I can go both ways on that. That's a U.S. consideration. But I certainly understand the conscience of the Google employees who object to those projects. That's U.S.-based. In terms of working with the Chinese government, it's real hard for me to justify that in any way. Mm-hmm. I'm disappointed in Google on this.
I was ready to argue with Jeff because I think it's amoral and awful and a real big issue. But I can't because Jeff actually, well, like, oh, man, now what do I do? I could argue. I guess I could play devil's advocate and argue that, you know, China is a big economic opportunity. It would be stupid of Google to pass this up. I, as a person, though, don't believe that to be true. So I will just make that as an intellectual, toss that out there. And that's all I can do here. I'm sorry.
If you were a shareholder, how would you feel about this?
I mean, think about, like, if I were a shareholder back in the 80s for a company that supported apartheid, I would be like, no, we should not be doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am a shareholder. And from that position, I think that all of the platforms now are going to have to act ethically and morally. And when they do not, it is in the long run going to bite them in the rear end. Witness what's happening to Facebook right now.
Yeah.
If you don't start with a high moral plane as an objective, when you have this control over the world, when you have this much power, then I think it's going to hurt you as a company. I think the same is true of Amazon and Twitter.
Although when we start talking about moral arguments, it does get dicey because different people, different organizations are going to have different moral. I mean, I can argue that, hey, participating with the Chinese government and possibly aiding and abetting their censorship and even murder, political murder of their citizens, I don't agree with that. But other people might be like, well, you know, Google's still flying their employees to conferences and that's contributing to climate change. And I don't agree with that. So I'm purposely picking very far apart issues. But yeah.
There's no such thing as moral purity. Don't I prove that every day? But so you're right, Stacey. But to select a moral stand and then stand by it. And so Google chose a moral position years ago about China. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen the reason that changes.
That's fair. Yeah.
Except for what you said, playing the devil's advocate just moments ago, Stacey, which is that there's a big opportunity there.
So goodness.
Of course we're going to explore it. And
devil's
that's,
advocate.
That's
yes.
The, dang it. The devil's advocate wins.
The gin is speaking.
Oh, yes, I know the gin is slowly but surely seeping in there. And, you know, apparently, according to this report, there were only a few hundred people that knew about it. Their jobs ran the risk of termination if they discussed it with anybody, which I feel like that makes sense, right?
That's
like
pretty normal.
Yeah, pretty standard stuff.
That's a thing that happens.
And communication would happen verbally. So they would almost insist on everything being verbally, minimizing a paper trail. I mean, they obviously knew how divisive of an issue this would be. The report says their biggest fear was that internal opposition would slow our operations. And then of course, now there's a looming strike that's kind of on the forefront. You know, a number of employees are, I think employees at Google and other large corporations like this are starting to realize that when they don't agree, this is actually a really effective way to do things, is to shut down business and strike. And so they're flexing that muscle more and more. And that's a good thing. Hopefully that applies
to
more pressure.
Anytime you have to do something in utter secret from, you know, like your family or your close friends, like you're like, nobody I know and love or none of my employees would agree for this, so we're going to have to keep it super secret.
Right.
You're probably doing something
that's
pretty
probably,
awful.
Yeah, that checks that
that's
box.
That's then, a sign.
Maybe we don't.
Yeah, except so much of what they do is secret for other reasons. There's a secrecy reflex that's all too well exercised.
This is a high, I mean, doing only verbal communication, that's, I mean, Kevin, you've been inside Google. That seems...
I would not say that's very standard practice there.
Mm-hmm. It's not the SOP. Oh, speaking of the Google employees, what about their latest memo on contract workers?
So this, I feel like I was out of the loop when this broke, probably shortly before the show, right? So I didn't get a chance to read through this. So if one of you knows more of the details on this, feel free, go for it. Because I didn't get a chance to read this one.
I should have introduced it before reading it. Hold on. Let me make sure it's the thing I think it is.
This is the Bloomberg article, right? Googlers right to CEO demanding equal treatment for contractors. That's about all I know.
So they had put that into their original kind of sexual harassment, their letter in demands over sexual harassment, and that was ignored. So today they sent full-time and contract workers sent a letter to Sundar Pichai asking for them to improve the conditions for their contract workers. And I'm like, what are those improvements? Let's see.
I thought I saw something about communications when there was a major issue, like I forget what issue they had. So maybe they had to evacuate the building.
Yeah, they said when the shooting happened at YouTube's campus, the contractors didn't get the same communications.
Oh boy!
Because they were on a different system.
It's just like apps for G Suite versus Gmail.
All right, everybody on G Suite, run outside. I can kind of speak to that because I actually was a contract worker there. I was not a full time employee. I was a TVC, as they call it, and some communications were filtered through a TVC manager, which would be somewhere else, maybe across the country, wherever. So yes, I could see that being an issue. I would say in my experience, had I ever been in that situation, I was surrounded by full-time Googlers who did have the communications, and they certainly wouldn't say, hey, we're all going to lunch outside, you stay here. I mean, they would have said, we got to get out of here. Should that be the standard base level of communication? No, but it never affected me in a year and a half.
That doesn't sound intentional. That sounds almost accidental. But what is TBC taking business care of? What is that's TBC stuff?
Oh, temps, vendors, contractors.
TVC. T as in Victor.
TVC, right. Temps, vendors, contractors, yes.
Later on, they get to these complaints in here, and these sound very, I can see this happening, but I can also see this not being the standard, but being excellent to put in a news article because it's wonderful. One contractor described a full-time staffer asking her to move from an office desk or cutting ahead of her in line for coffee because she was a contractor and therefore not as important.
That's atypical, I think. That is very atypical.
That feels like a jerk thing to do. But there are, I mean, I think there's some real issues here. I think there's, sure, being on communications is easy to be like, hey, please tell us things that concern our safety. That's fixable. I think the bigger issue is people are often contracting for positions that used to be full-time to avoid paying for things like healthcare and to avoid certain legal requirements that come with having a full-time worker. And I think if you are a huge company with, I think they, did they say it was like 60,000 contractors? Or, and I may be making that number up. Let's wait before I say that. But with lots of contractors, they don't actually give a number in this one. If you have that many contractors and they're doing those kind of jobs, maybe they should be full-time. I understand the financial reasons why you wouldn't do that because paying for health insurance kind of sucks. But if someone's actually a full-time employee and everything but name only, then they should be an employee.
Yeah, agreed.
This is the issue for our time. This is the big labor issue for the current generation.
Yeah, it seems that way. Let's take a break, and then we will come back and we'll talk about more. Maybe we will go off the Google trail a little bit and talk about the big Facebook news that's been breaking this afternoon with the UK Parliament releasing redacted copies of some pretty sensitive Facebook documents. Maybe we'll talk about that. Maybe we won't. Well, we'll find out here in a few minutes. I'll let that stew with you guys. You can let me know if you want to go there. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. If you're looking to buy a home, you're probably paying attention to the interest rates and realizing, hey, they are rising slowly but surely. They are rising. That can cause a little bit of anxiety because you don't know if now is the time or if you wait, it's going to rise too high or when are those changes happening? It's just everything super unpredictable. And so it makes a stressful situation even more stressful. Well, our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process, and it's super simple. First step, you answer a few simple questions. They're going to check your credit, and out of that, you'll get pre-qualified approval. So you'll be pre-qualified to kind of start looking for your home. Step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, your assets, and your credit. Doesn't take long. It only takes less than around 24 hours. And that's going to give you a verified approval. When you have that verified approval, that gives you the strength of a cash buyer. So you can really start looking. And step three, once you're verified, you then qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval, which basically means they're going to lock up your rate at that particular point, whatever it happens to be, for up to 90 days while you shop. So it's not going anywhere. And the best part is if the Fed raises the rates, if those rates go up, your rate is going to stay locked in for up to 90 days. If the rates happen to drop, if they go down, your rate goes down with it. So either way, you win. Just it's the awesome thinking that you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. So to get started and to learn more about all this, go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/twig. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of This Week in Google. Want to talk about Facebook or should we stay with Google? What do you guys think?
I like Google more than Facebook, but if we want to talk about Facebook, I'm ready.
I just thought it was big breaking news. It's like taking over tech meme right now. We don't have to. We could talk about
it. No, I mean, to me, it's like, oh, hey, Facebook is kind of evil and uses data in ways that they've told you they don't use your data. And oh my gosh, news at 10. I mean, yeah.
Here's another example of Facebook being evil, basically.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's bad. This is why I'm like, no Facebook.
Yeah.
But if there's like deeper depth here, if someone wants to defend Facebook, I'm looking at you, Jeff. You go right ahead.
No, I don't understand it. I haven't read enough. I don't understand it. I mean, every media company there is, and I'm not calling the platforms a media company, but you're in the media business. Everyone in the media business, put it that way, uses whatever data they have to increase the value of what they've offered advertisers. Full stop. Right. The difference is Facebook has more. So what I haven't understood in this story is because I have not read enough of it because I was out today, is what makes this different from what Time Inc. would have done with data they had about users at a specific
time. Time Inc. is very disorganized with their data compared to Facebook. No.
True, or maybe they'll still be alive as Time Inc. But you know, they would use whatever data they had, even back in the print days, in essence, even to mailing addresses with advertisers. So I'm not sure what's shady about this. That's not a defense. I don't get the story yet.
Yeah.
So part of it is Facebook is looking at, so there's the data sharing, but there's also that Facebook's would, it would track popularity of certain apps through their platform and monitor their success and then use that to compete against them. That's actually the same thing that Amazon does when it comes to launching new features for like AWS. So that is not inherently evil. That's just how platforms participate. They also talk about how Facebook gives some companies access to data, but not other apps access to user data. So here, the quote that the UK government said is, the files show evidence of Facebook taking aggressive positions against apps, with the consequence that denying them access to data led to the failure of their businesses. And then if you look at it that way, that's kind of part of the, you know, you're on a platform. It's not a neutral place. You live and die by the platform, you know? So
large advertisers get volume discounts that others don't get. Large suppliers to Walmart get benefits that others don't get. Again, I'm not defending because I don't know enough. If somebody can come in and tell us what makes this in any context bad, but on its face, I don't see something new there.
So someone pointed out, that it violated an FTC agreement that Facebook had signed. And if that case, that's just illegal. But this is a long series of tweets, and I'm not reading all of them at the moment. So I'm not 100% sure how that works.
This is why you didn't want to talk about this.
This is why I'm like, I'm just like, do I really want to know how deeply Facebook is screwing people over?
I don't know that there's anything really different, Jeff, going along what you said, different, say, than what Time used to do, et cetera. I think the issue is it's just a constant theme with Facebook. It's just over and over and over again. They kind of get caught doing things that, A, we question should they be doing at all, and B, we wouldn't know unless they got caught. That's
right.
It's I think it's the sneakiness in a sense, and I don't know if that's the best word.
Right. This is good.
Sorry.
Yeah, this details the sneakiness here. I'll put it in here.
Everything gets interpreted with the sneaky glasses now.
No, this is actually sneaky.
Okay, because that's my problem. Sometimes I can't tell what's sneaky and what isn't.
Here we go. I'm dropping this in here for you.
I see. You got something new.
Here's a Twitter thing that breaks down the level of sneakiness from the actual documents, which is always nice to see the actual documents. So it's talking about with the Android phones. Oh, hey, look, a tie into Google. Mm-hmm. And it seems to show that they said, hey, by the way, we need to let people positively opt into this data. There it is right there. So if you click on those documents there, they basically right here, they're like, hey, we need to do opt-in. And then the next one is like, hey, never mind. We're only going to request this without, you know, the personal opt-in. So that actually does look a little shifty.
That's shady.
Right. they actually said in these emails. And also, like, along with this, UK lawmakers actually published these emails that I guess they got a hold of last week related to something else. And so I thought that was just kind of weird. Like, hey, we got this stuff. We want everybody to see it. Here you go. And then Facebook's, you know, doing damage control. But within these emails, like Facebook's change to the Android app policy
that resulted in what you were just talking about, the call and message data being recorded that we heard about a month ago. It was deliberately hidden from users. Facebook knew that it would be risky, but then they decide in those emails, yeah, but let's just do it anyways. You know, things like that. And kind of tying with what you said, Kevin, about, it's like this constant pattern of, no, we didn't do that. You know, something is published that shows that they did it. Yeah, we did that. But it's not as bad as you think. They're getting it wrong. You know, it's a, I don't know. It feels very familiar at this point.
They don't say it's not as bad as you think. They just say, oh, yeah, sorry about that. And Zuck gets up and writes this heartfelt long blog post about how, you know, privacy is overrated, but he understands we're different. We're moving along in this continuum. You know,
This isn't the full story. You're not getting the full story. And I think that's
I've been struggling for months. There's a piece that I've been supposed to write for somebody else for a long, long time, and I have horrible writer's block on it, is to look at the moral basis of behavior of the platforms. And it's hard to know where to start, which sounds like a straight line. I don't mean it that way, but it's hard to know where you set the bar versus other companies. Siva Vaidyanathan argued when I wrote What Would Google Do that I was seeing the company wrong because it can't be any better than any company out there. It's going to operate like any company out there. You're wrong to expect anything positive from them, basically. And I still disagree with Siva on that, but I get it. I especially get it in the current context and the discussion we've just had in the last half hour. But these companies are extremely powerful, and they're going to be watched over, and they've got to operate on a moral plane. And what is that plane? And I'm having trouble trying to figure out how to express that. Mm.
Don't be evil. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much
sounds familiar.
Don't be evil. I mean, it's
pretty much does it.
I mean, in the context of being a human being, I mean, if I think about me as a teenager versus me today, you know, I have done some pretty crappy things, even knowing they were kind of crappy. And now that I'm older, I'm like, oh, those were really crappy. Wow. So as a company, you have a bunch of individuals making these decisions and they're influenced by the people at the top. And currently at different companies, I think you start with the goals of people at the top and their founding kind of creators and cultural ethos. And I think Facebook started out in the kind of with a lot fewer assets at the top, right? In terms of like having a good moral compass, and it just spiraled from there.
The entire ethos of the company followed down that road.
Yeah.
I see what you mean. How about we shift towards where we aspire to be someday, and that's the highest paid YouTubers in the world. Apparently number one, according to Forbes. So Forbes every year publishes a list of the highest paid YouTube stars. 2018 list is upon us. At the very top is Ryan Toys Review, a 7-year-old that has 17 million followers, has a toy line at Walmart, apparently, and made $22 million.
$22 million. I haven't heard of any of these people.
I know. I almost wrote that in my notes. Let's talk about a bunch of people we've never heard of, but they're household names to a whole lot of people. Number two, Jake Paul, of course, Logan's younger brother, rapper, prankster. I didn't know he was a rapper. I knew he was a prankster. $21.5 million. Dude Perfect in third place, $20 million.
Their videos are great.
Trick Shot.
It's the only one I know on this list, I think.
They do a bunch of trick shot stuff, so you can kind of see it up there at the top. PewDiePie, of course, is still on the list, though I believe at one point, maybe it was last year, PewDiePie dominated this list, right? Or was near the top. Now number nine, only a paltry $15.5 million last year.
Slatter. I don't know that his income has gone down so much that his others have gone up.
Yeah, right. Wow, it just goes to show the crazy network effect of YouTube. Isn't that unbelievable? And then number 10, Logan Paul, who we've heard a lot of, unfortunately, this last year. I know too much about Logan Paul, and I've never seen a single video. $14.5 million.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
This whole thing is crazy. I'm just looking at this and, well, I'm wondering where are all the ASMR videos that my daughter apparently still listens to? And all of this is a YouTube trend. It's lo-fi music. Is that what it's called? Lo-fi? Help me out here, chat room, or people who might be not 40 years old.
I'm too old.
What's lo-fi?
Lo-fi music. It's like if you Google it, you will find the YouTube stuff.
Chill hop.
It's basically like chill study music.
Oh, okay.
And if you play it,
I think like 8-bit music or something.
No, but it's everywhere, and like my child listens to it. And Vice did a story about it in July about how lo-fi hip-hop radio became a YouTube phenomenon. And it's true. It's weird. I should convince my daughter to come on here and talk briefly about YouTube. She's way ahead of this stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, because I guess music like this is easy to work on and not get too distracted by the words. And yeah,
it's
I can see it.
Because she works and has a YouTube video in the background that's just providing the music, which I'm like... As a person who grew up on dial-up, I'm like, that is hogging a lot of bandwidth right now.
Don't you know long distance costs a fortune, young lady?
Hang up exactly. That phone.
Why don't you just download your chill hop like I would have done when I was a kid?
So I thought I'd see like some popular lo-fi or ASMR stuff on this list, but I did not. It was just guys who prank.
No, that's the next... Edges. Like, that's the trend that's threatening to take over. Sure. A couple of years from now, it's going to be dominated with ASMR.
Oh.
I don't actually know that. And if I did, I'd be doing that because that's a lot of money.
I was about to say, it's really easy to make this stuff.
You just got to get the right microphone and do that in the mic a lot. YouTube hit 5 billion installs. I feel like that's not really that surprising. Google's core apps always hit crazy numbers in downloads on the Play Store. So I'm surprised YouTube didn't hit it sooner, to be honest. There's got to be something more meaty to bite our teeth into. What am I missing here? We've already talked Hangouts. Osunar Pichai going to testify before the House committee. It was supposed to happen today, actually.
Right.
It was supposed to happen today. Of course, the funeral... the ceremony for George H.W. Bush was today, so it got postponed. So Sundar Pichai heading to the House Judiciary Committee on December 11th, 10 a.m. Eastern. And I'm sure he's going to talk a lot about what we were just talking about earlier with Dragonfly, potentially also conservative bias in search results, power of Google algorithms and data privacy, and a competitive behavior. It's going to be a fun time. I don't know. I'm sure there'll be some news from there.
I thought since that hasn't happened yet, I thought this story was actually kind of cool, which was the Google and Amazon to offer AirPod alternatives and talking about how Apple is likely to add health sensors to their stuff. The reason I just thought that was neat is because I've talked to a scientist who studies hearing and all the stuff you can do with your ears, and you can actually get super granular heartbeat, oxygen, and even data that can be interpreted to give like a sense of focus, like how focused you are at this moment in time. Okay. So if you want a sneak peek of like if Apple's adding health sensors, those might be some of the features that you would see, like much better quality on something like that, which means you wouldn't just have to have an Apple Watch for health monitoring. You could just have AirPods, which opens that up to a lot more people. I was excited by that.
It is interesting. I'm kind of stuck on the implementation of that because I do wear an Apple Watch every day and I run with the watch and the AirPods. And I track everything with the Apple Watch and I get my music from the AirPods. And okay, so now we're going to have wireless things that track my health data from my ears, which is great, but how do I get my music? I still need a wearable device with music on it. So I'm kind of...
Okay, sure. Well, that's when you've got your watch on you. And you're running, but the rest of us who don't run, people like me, perhaps, I'm just going to carry my phone and have that, and I could get my health data from that. So I don't need the watch. Does that make sense? So
Kevin's thinking the time he's least likely to wear the watch is when he sweats on it, but if he'll go ahead and wear it all the rest of the time.
Well, I pretty much wear it all the time. It's ridiculous. Right. Yeah,
I can call Kevin on his watch, like, anywhere. It's a little disconcerting. I'm like, please, please don't pick up the phone.
I'm outside a mile from the house.
This is not
a
bathroom thing. This is just simply like,
yeah, I mean, I guess it's, I mean, are we saying that the ear pods or earphones or earbuds are the next smartwatch because of tracking? I don't know.
No, I just think if you want to get data on like focus, or if you want to get data on like your, you know, I don't think it's like a continuous heart rate monitor kind of thing, because you're probably not listening to them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think to get like a picture of like health, and I don't know what data Apple actually needs for their like arrhythmia. I don't know, Jeff, if you know this, for like tracking that sort of stuff. But if you have your headphones in,
you need a continuous circuit. That's why the watch is actually suspect for, I was talking to a doctor about this, for the arrhythmia. That's why the cardia is better, because you hold down both hands so you get a complete circuit. Interesting about the ear is you could get a complete circuit across two devices.
I'm going to just, we're all like, maybe, I don't know.
You could also listen to the heartbeat, because don't we all, you know, when we go to sleep, we hear our heartbeat, right? Because it's coursing through our ears. I wonder, with highly sensitive mics, you know, we have speakers.
They don't use microphones. It's a separate sensor that they do.
Oh, really?
It's the type of, what do they call it with the green light, like on your fitness thing?
Pulse.
Oh, I see.
Oximeter or pulse?
Is it a pulse oximeter?
Yeah, I think so.
They actually use those kind of sensors. There's a woman I did a podcast with. Her name is Poppy Crum, and she works at Bose. And we had this fascinating discussion of like all the things you can sense in your ear better than you could sense it like on your wrist. And it was,
you know, we can go to the moon. We can create a self-driving car. Can they finally just create earbuds that will stay in my friggin' ears?
I have some duct tape, Jeff.
That aren't painful. Run with the damn things. They don't stay in. They just fall out. I got weird ears.
The Jabra Elite 65Ts are my favorites. They totally stay in my ears. They're great.
Mine too. Do they hurt though? Hurt after. So after, like, if I'm on a plane 3 hours, I have to take them out in my ear, like the whatever that little whorl is around the edge of your ear hole. That hurts.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, because I've had it with other headphones. I don't get it with these, but I have seen complaints about from other people on the same thing. And also the Broggy Dash Pro earphones, they have a heart rate monitor embedded in them too. So some of these actually do take your heart rate through your ear already. So
because Apple doesn't invent new things.
No,
they just make old things better.
Yeah, exactly. They take a formula and they make it better, I guess.
So they stay in just because they have the little rubber tippy things that stick in? Or
They are definitely the kind that kind of smoosh in there a little bit. But they don't smoosh in so far that, like, what is the name? I can't remember the other earphones that I used to use all the time. When you put those in, they would secure into place, but it's almost like they'd go so far that it would, like, suction your ear and things would get louder.
Right.
And I hate that. Mm-hmm. Like, I dealt with it with those, and then I tried the Jabra Elites, and I was like, wait a minute, these stay in my ear, and they don't do that anymore. And for me, they're very comfortable, and I love them.
Yeah, you kind of you put them in like at an angle, and then you twist them in.
Yep, kind of lock it in place.
And it feels like putting in like a smoke detector or any one of those devices.
Totally. It's the perfect. That's the perfect comparison, strangely enough. Yes. So those are good. I'm actually really surprised that Google hasn't come out with their own AirPod alike, because they came out,
remember, with the buds, and those were terrible.
Yeah, they had the Pixel Buds, and those have the cable between the two. So they're definitely, their minds are there. I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Where they go.
I would like Google, probably, they probably shouldn't, let them figure out messaging and then they can do it.
First, then we'll save lives.
Yeah, take care of the things you know you need to take care of. Waymo One is launching today, Phoenix metro area. It's the commercial taxi service by Waymo. They had promised to start the commercial service by the end of the year. They got there. Although apparently there's going to be, it's only going to be offered to early riders who were already testing this prior to this. Those early riders were subject to an NDA, so we'll probably start hearing more now that it's officially out there for these riders about the experience and what it's all like. There will be someone sitting in the safety driver sitting in the cab to be able to take over, and I guess prices similar to what you get from Uber and Lyft. So Waymo One coming to a Phoenix near you.
That's a hilarious name.
Those are, I had seen some of those when I was out in Scottsdale, last year, about a year ago now. Those surprised me. They don't just have the LiDAR on top. they have it on both sides and the front and the back, I think. I mean, those are not cheap sensors, and they've got at least four, if not five, on every one of these Pacifica minivans.
Wow. They got Google money.
Yeah.
They got Alphabet money. 5G is apparently on the horizon. I don't know if you knew, but the Qualcomm event, it was Qualcomm Snapdragon Technology Summit, happened or is happening right now in Hawaii. But there was a big kind of announcement yesterday where they unveiled the new Qualcomm Snapdragon 855 processor. So this is going to be the processor that all of your, you know, top of the line Android devices over the course of the next year will be stocked with. Expect to see this on all of the, you know, including probably next year's Pixel devices and everything. This is going to be the chipset for the next year that you're going to want in your phone if you're buying premium. And it has features like a multi-core AI engine. They say three times the improved AI performance, specialization around enhanced computational photography. Obviously, photography on high-end cameras, especially in smartphones, is a really big deal. And there's so much of that computational stuff happening nowadays. So there's going to be part of the silicon devoted to that. Optimized for gaming. Also, news about 3D sonic sensors for in-display ultrasonic fingerprint sensors. That'll work even through like dirty displays and stuff like that. So,
which is cool.
Yeah.
Cause and ultrasonic sensors are actually relatively cheap. They're used in all kinds of places. Like I had once researched ultrasonic sensors and they're used all over the place and they're pretty cheap and kind of a good use case. The challenge I think will be, I'm curious how it will work with dirty hands. Yeah. Because what it's doing is measuring the distance in your fingerprint whorls. So I'm like, oh, if that changes because your hands are a little dirty, what does that do? That would be the test I would be performing.
Get your hands super dirty. Put your hands in a mud
just,
puddle.
Just a little grit. Run a little grit across your finger pad and see what happens.
But yeah. So that's we can expect more devices having those kinds of features next year, including apparently a Samsung device of some sort. Samsung and Verizon announced plans to release one of the first 5G phones in the first half of 2019. They're all kind of getting on the record at this point saying, oh, we've got one too. We've got one too. We're not going to miss the 5G train. They showed off a concept of the device, I believe, at the tech summit. Or at least they plan to. I'm not sure if the device that I saw during yesterday's keynote was the Samsung device specifically, but... And apparently this phone that's going to be released is not necessarily going to be the Galaxy S10. So if you're assuming that the S10 is going to have 5G capability, that might be off the mark. Yeah. So there we go. I don't know what else to add on that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anybody excited about 5G? I feel like there's a lot of they're trying to drum up a lot of excitement around 5G. I don't know where it's leading for anyone.
Too early. Too early to be excited, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think on a handset you're going to care. I think there's some interesting use cases that we're not talking about. So I think like for mobile broadband, you're basically it's more capacity. So yay in lower latency. That's not. We shouldn't scoff at that, but I'm not sure we have the apps yet for that are going to be on your handset. What's cool is if you guys really want this, do you want me to keep going or not? Should I?
Go. Yeah, do it.
Okay. I was like, I always feel weird nerding out about things. So I'm
get
like,
there.
Okay. So on the fixed side, we're going to see it. You'll be able, like Verizon's doing this actually, you're going to see more broadband services to places that are faster based on this. So that's exciting. It'll be 5G and it'll be over some of the new millimeter wave spectrum that the FCC is auctioning off. But it's also AT&T has talked about plans to use spectrum that's currently using for like 3G. So you're going to see you're going to see 5G over not 5G spectrum is the best way to think about that. And then the other thing is you're going to have network slicing. So you're going to be able to dedicate certain chunks of network capacity for like autonomous cars or for medical devices. And you're going to be able to do that a lot more easily and flexibly than you have in the past. So if you think about it, a carrier, like if you have a fleet of autonomous trucks coming across the border or something and dropping on your network, you can automatically say, oh crap, those guys totally can't lose their connection. Let's give them this slice. And you can do it almost in real time. And that's going to be really interesting. And I don't know what that's going to do for carriers' business models. So that's one of the big questions I'm asking. I'll let you know
why I want it. Hotel Wi-Fi.
No one wants good hotel Wi-Fi, Jeff. You're out of touch. No, I'm just kidding.
I want to get rid of hot hotel Wi-Fi like right now.
Yeah, I understand. Well, then, we will. That remains to be seen if 5G can solve.
Oh, wait, did we have to do the Chrome log change?
Oh shoot. We forgot that. Let's do that real quick. Thank you for the reminder.
Sorry.
It's time for the Google change log. Dang, I almost forgot. Thanks for keeping me on task. Let's see here. Google Play's best of 2018 list has been unveiled. If you were wondering what the fan favorites for game, app, movie, a whole bunch of other things were, you can head over that and head over to the list and check it out. But in case you were wondering, the fan favorite game, PUBG Mobile, fan favorite app, YouTube TV. I feel like there's some shenanigans going on there, maybe. This is a Google list, YouTube TV. I don't know. YouTube TV is pretty cool, I'll be honest. Favorite movie, Avengers Infinity War. Best app of 2018, Drops. Learn 31 new languages. I've never heard of that app until just now. But apparently it's a really great app and a whole lot more. So you can check that out and find some new apps to install or new movies to watch. Google virtualized a museum in the Google Arts and Culture app. Apparently, it allows you to get up close and personal with Johannes Vermeer's works of art. All of Vermeer's works of art. You may remember the best known piece, which is "Girl with the Pearl Earring." This is an AR kind of museum, so everything is scaled appropriately according to all the other art, and you can kind of explore it through the magic of AR. And apparently, it's really cool. I have not checked it out yet on my own, but I have heard that it is neato. Let's see here. Google worked with Adaptive Design Association to host a 48-hour hackathon for prototyping games that focus on Morse code. And this was a way to reach kids with physical disabilities, all about teaching Morse code to them. So games were designed that utilized the Gboard Morse keyboard. So games like an H-Synth that played musical notes with the Morse keyboard, and a game called Morse Striker, which is a soccer spy game, and a whole bunch of others. Google, of course, posted the games on its experiments with Google site, and there are open source examples of the code as well. It's all about improving the capabilities through Morse code for physical disabilities. A new Google Home Mini, a new color anyways, not a new model, but a new color. And it very, very Tiffany's inspired. It's, what is this, aqua? I think that would be the aqua Google Home Mini. It's very colorful.
That is aqua, yes.
If that's your jam, then go ahead and put that in your living room, or I don't know where that goes. But
it is beachy.
Very what? Beachy?
Very
yes.
Beachy.
That, and I think there's also the coral color, so they're going for some really nice color options, sharp color options. New features coming to smart displays, Lenovo smart display, really any smart display that's running Google Assistant software. My cookbook feature, touch alarms and quick settings, Nest Hello two-way talk. You can remove, favorite, and share photos through the interface, and a whole lot more. So if you have one of those, which I do not, I couldn't get over the fact that you can't disable YouTube on them. And it's just, that's a deal breaker for me, unfortunately. Hopefully one of these days they'll roll that update out. Google uploaded an app called Pixel Sounds to the Play Store. I don't know if it's up again. They had put it there and then it was removed, and anyone that downloaded it really didn't get much functionality out of it. So it seemed like one of those server-side kind of activation things. But apparently it's going to be an app where you can manage your alarms, your ringtones, your notifications, and it will kind of integrate itself with the sounds menu settings on the Pixel phone with new options and features.
Oh, my God. So I have to have an app to manage my sounds? That's terrible.
Yeah, I know.
I'm old and cranky. That sucks. Okay, go on.
I tend to agree.
Have some gin.
Yes. The solution is in a bottle for you right now.
Drink.
15, yeah, to the bottom. 15 years strong, Google released Santa's Village, the Christmas-themed site with the Google Santa Tracker that I know I use every year with my kids. They love it. There's a bunch of educational games, lesson plans, instructional videos, of course, the Santa Tracker. You can also ask Google Home, where's Santa, and it'll let you know. Although I remember last year, my kids were doing it for like a month after Christmas because it was still giving the same kind of canned answers afterwards. They were like, that doesn't make any sense. In Gboard, apparently, there's holiday stickers and stuff that you can use as well. And then finally, Kevin, you wrote about support for virtual desktops and what else? Requesting mobile website on Chrome OS coming soon?
Yeah, so that's one thing that's definitely lacking on Chrome OS that every other desktop platform has is virtual desktops or spaces or whatever you want to call them, where you can put different apps on virtual displays, so to speak, and slide over to a different desktop for maybe productivity and another one for personal, et cetera. So that's in the works. I found some code for that. And this, I think, will apply more to smaller Chrome OS tablets, of which there's only one right now, the Acer Chromebook Tab 10. You will be able to request the mobile view of a website on a Chrome OS tablet, which is kind of the opposite of the iOS version where you can request the desktop site. My theory, though, is, and I wrote it in here, the smaller the display size, the less value you get from a full desktop browser. So it makes sense on a smaller device, in my opinion, like the Chromebook Tab 10. I don't think I'd use the mobile sites on, say, the Pixel Slate, for example. But right. You'll be able to.
Nice. And that is the Google Change Log. I love that that's a feature. That's a feature of the show again. I was sad when it disappeared. It's good to have it back. I guess it's been back for a long time now at this point, but there you go. Let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode. Sorry, I just got a notification. And then
sorry.
Everyone grabs their phone.
Was that me? No. We'll take a break and thank the sponsor, and then we'll come back with tips, tricks, numbers, all that fun stuff. This week in Google is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Developers watching the show, listen up. DigitalOcean provides the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications with Droplets. It's virtual machines that are a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. And you can choose, there's just a number of options. You can choose from standard or CPU-optimized Droplets. And then, starting there, you can customize outward. DigitalOcean is designed for developers. It's got an easy-to-use control panel and an API that lets developers spend more time coding and less time managing their infrastructure. Industry-leading price to performance. You can access the compute resources that you need at the lowest rates. And that's going to save up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. And you're always going to know what you'll pay per month. Always have that information right up front with a flat pricing structure across all data center regions, so there's no surprises. Included at no additional cost, get a number of things. You get 99.99% uptime SLA, cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerting, full DNS management, global data centers, of course, enterprise SSDs, and an easy-to-use API. Over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest-growing startups, rely on DigitalOcean, and that's to remove their infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today, and you will receive a free $100 credit. All you got to do is go to do.co/twit. That's do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. do.co/twit, and we thank DigitalOcean for their support of This Week in Google. All right, rounding out the show here, let's start with you, Kevin, because I see something in the dock for you. What you got? What's your stuff?
So you, Jason, may have actually come across this with All About Android, but for others who may not be aware, and since we talked about security so much today, I wanted to point out the E Foundation, which is another mobile platform play, basically using the Lineage OS version of Android. You can install this on a bunch of different devices right now. It's really in the early testing phases. And the whole idea is you will have total control over your privacy. You will not be giving the eFoundation or anyone else, any app makers, your information. I have not tried this yet. I'd like to find one of my old phones that will work with it, but none of them do just yet. But the idea, again, is for privacy-based experience. They are looking to start selling phones with this operating system in about a month. So I wonder if they're going to be at CES. Stacy and I will be there. I don't know if anybody else on the show will be there, but I will actually stop by if they're there because I'm very interested in this approach. I think it's tough to have a third or alternative mobile platform right now, but a lot of people are, you know, have privacy on their minds, and as well they should. So the eFoundation is something that you can try and look into if that's something that appeals to you.
Very cool. Like that. And I'll have to check that out, look into that a little bit more. I'm sure I have a device somewhere that I can test that out on. Let's see here. Stacy, what you got?
What do I have? Ooh, I could take you on the road and show it to you, but here's a lovely picture on the website that I put in there. This is it has the longest name, but it is a smoke detector that also detects carbon monoxide, acts as a speaker, and has Apple HomeKit and Amazon's Madam A. So, and it sounds amazing. It is $250, which is crazy expensive. So this is not for everyone, but if you are the type of person who does not want a bunch of echoes or whatnots running around your house, and you wanted to play Apple Music, although the Amazon Echoes will start getting that on their own, this device will have this. And it sounds amazing. It's got a little night light that you can change to like be purple or blue. You can make phone calls on it using Madam A. And I think it's a nice device. It's not for everybody. But if you're going to upgrade your smoke detectors, it also sends you an alert when your smoke detector goes off. You could have one of these with your, this is a first alert, but I have Kitty smoke detectors in my house, and this works and sets off the network smoke detectors. I don't know what else to tell you about it, but it's actually it's a surprisingly good product. At first, I thought it was really gimmicky when I read about it, but having tried it, I would actually put this in my house. It is expensive, so it's not for everyone. But
nice. Although taking calls from, I have to wonder how the call is going to sound on the other end.
And I'm going to test that with Kevin. Actually, hey Kevin, stick around after the show because I need to call you on my smoke detector.
Oh, can't hear you. You're muted,
Kevin. You're muted.
Sorry, I was talking to the dog. let's hope there's no fire issues when you give me a call on that, because I don't know what would happen to the phone call, you know.
Oh, we could set off the smoke detector.
No.
Wow.
Have to test it out. Put it through its paces. Light a fire so that the alarm starts going off, and then make the call while the alarm's going off.
Oh, I was thinking I would light the fire while I was talking to Kevin.
Oh, I guess you could test it before and after too that way.
So. You know, that covers all the bases.
Totally. Good plan. Jeff, what's your number?
So I'm hoping, because Stacy had a meeting with a Bose person, maybe she knows more about this than I do, but I'm fascinated by the Bose AR headset glasses coming out, especially because we talked a few weeks ago about how it was audio AR and how I believe this ought to be used for people with limited sight. And so if the glasses know where you are and where you're headed, what could they give you in audio? Sounds really interesting to me.
AT&T actually has a pair of glasses called Aria glasses that do that already, and they have haptic feedback in them. So it vibrates to which way you go. I'm not saying they're way expensive and come with an AT&T subscription. So this is probably a cheaper, better option.
This is $200 and available for pre-order.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the idea of playing with audio AR, audio is a different input. Smart to where you are. If it's working in the home and it's talking to you and your smoke detector and all that, why shouldn't it work out on the street when you're just walking around? And also, obviously, you can ask Madam A, you can ask Mr. G, and so on, questions and get answers. The story says that it's not an earplug; it's a small speaker, so you don't want to ask for when is your rendezvous with your lover on the phone, because other people can hear you.
That's okay.
It'd be good for your reputation, yeah.
I mean, then people will be like, wow, she's really amazing. Wow, okay.
And where did she get those glasses?
Exactly.
It's a bonus.
Amazing she got a lover with those glasses because they're pretty dorky looking, but that's great.
So I will tell you one tidbit from my the interview I had with the Bose lady is everybody, I guess this makes sense, right? But because everybody's ear canal and outside of their ear is differently shaped, we all hear things differently. We don't think about it, but we all have a different perception of what we hear. And what she was talking about is how that experience gets flattened a lot of time in earphones, which subtly changes how each of us hears everything through earphones, which I was just like,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
She was really fun to talk to.
I mean, as far as dorky-looking AR glasses are concerned, these aren't bad. Bad.
They're better than Google Glass.
The sides of them are a little strange.
Amen, brother.
I'll confess to you that my non-connected sunglasses without anything in them were more expensive than these sunglasses. And they look better, but that's just my opinion.
And these are Bose. So
they are.
You know. You remember back at Google I.O., Google had said about its home devices that they would add a pretty please feature for speaking nicely to your devices and being rewarded for it. Apparently that is rolling out now. So if you say please when you ask a question, you'll get responses tailored to it. Things like, thanks for asking so nicely. You know, never hurts to start treating our devices with respect and kindness. And also teaching our kids to do that. Maybe it's good practice for them as well. Some other features include list integration that now includes third-party apps like Keep, the way it used to before they changed it and it started to suck really bad. also AnyDo, Bring, and Todoist integration, so you can set that up. So yay for that. Broadcast replies is rolling out, which basically makes these devices more of like a two-way communication thing. I'm curious to test that out. I want to see how that works. I'm a little confused on that, but and then lyric support for screen assistant devices, although apparently right now that only works with Google Play Music, which, as we know, Google Play Music is being phased out in lieu of YouTube Music, and YouTube Music really sucks, so I'm not very happy about that.
They're going to come out with Hangouts Music next.
Yes. Summer. Oh my God. Hangouts Music.
Man,
no,
that was like,
don't ruin
Jason's,
it, please.
Jason's things in two very strong opinions.
Yes. Sorry. I had to put that in there. They're data points. They have to be mentioned. And we have reached the end of This Week in Google, this episode, anyways, not the whole show. But this week's episode has come to a close. And thank you once again for inviting me on, you guys. I love doing the show with you, and it's always a lot of fun. Kevin Toefel, thanks for dropping in today. Where do you want people to follow all of your amazing work online? I assume aboutchromebooks.com.
I hear that's a pretty good site. Yeah, so I would hit that.
My Bible. I love it.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. Seriously.
At Kevin C.
It's
Toefel
not as good as Gutenberg's
Twitter.
Bible, but it's Jeff's Bible.
close second. And Jeff, thanks for making it. Even France couldn't keep you from being connected to us, so thank you.
Hotel Wi-Fi, so bon nuit.
Hey, it worked, man. It's not the sharpest connection in the world, but it was stable. I gotta say, it was very stable. Buzzmachine.com and a whole lot else. Anything you want to add? At Jeff Jarvis on Twitter.
I'm going to bed.
All right. It's time for bed, Jeff. Tuck yourself in.
Bonne nuit, mon ami.
And Stacey Higginbotham, always so much fun to do a show with you. IoTpodcast.com, Stacey on IoT.com, and at GigaStacey on Twitter. Thank you,
and
Stacey.
And I didn't make my goal. I only had two things of gin. Sorry, you guys.
So you did two bottles?
Yeah, but there's only 1 ounce, so I did 2 ounces.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Just do that the next couple of days and you're caught up.
Yes, that'll be my... Hold on, guys. I need to drink.
Hold on. Yes, I got a calendar reminder. I need to do something really important. Let's see here. We do this show every Wednesday, I believe, at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, somewhere around there. Today we started a little bit earlier, and I really appreciate it. Thank you, Carson, for setting that up. It helps me out for this day in particular. But we do it live, so you can watch it live. If you go to twit.tv/live, you can watch as we record this show live, or you can subscribe to it, of course. twit.tv/twig is where you can go, and you can find, that's a new header image that I had not seen yet. And all the episodes are listed there. The subscribe information is there, so you can subscribe, and you don't even have to think about it. It just appears on your phone like magic. It's amazing. twit.tv/twig. And I think that's about it. We've reached the end. I'm Jason Howell. Thanks for joining us for another episode of This Week in Google. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.